Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Helles Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Louisiana State Poet Laureate Jack Bedell, whose new book is No Brother This Storm, and we'll take a look back at 2018. Jack Bedell is the State Poet Laureate of Louisiana, as well as Professor of English at Southeastern Louisiana University in Hammond, editor of the journal Louisiana Literature, and director of the Louisiana Literature Press. He is a busy man. And with all this, he's the author of 9 books. Today, we're talking about his most recent book, No Brother This Storm. Welcome, Jack. It's always so great to see you.
Thank you, Susan. It's wonderful to be back here. It's been too long.
It has been. So you're midway through your term as Poet Laureate now. How has that been for you? What are some of the projects you've undertaken?
It's really fantastic. I knew that it would be a little exhausting. I knew that it would be a little busy. But what I didn't know is how rewarding it would be and how invigorating it would be to get into so many communities all over the state. It's one thing to think, hey, let's get out there and amplify poetry. Let's get out there and celebrate the voices in Louisiana and see what we can make happen. It's another thing to get on the ground in a place like Grand Coteau and realize these voices are amplifying themselves. They don't need my help. They're wonderful. I just finished the weekend at the Festival of Words in Grand Coteau, and this state is in great shape. Even the fourth and fifth graders I encountered were phenomenal poets. I'm really sad that I'm halfway through. I feel like I'm just getting started with some of the initiatives of getting into the schools and really celebrating young poets. I feel like I'm just getting started, and it's almost time to turn it over to someone else.
Well, it's not only a terrific validation for your work, your personal work, but it also plugs you right into that great hunger for poetry that I think is out there.
Whatever the story is, that poetry just needs to be introduced to people to get them to love it. That's not what I'm encountering in the communities I'm going into. I'm running into 50 poets in every community.
I mean, wow.
It's not a matter of having to scrape together people who might be interested in what you have to share with them. It's really a matter of having time to celebrate every voice you do run into, because it's not at all incorrect to say that the readership and the authorship of poetry is on the rise, because I see it every day.
Now we have to get the publishing infrastructure up to match it, you know?
If we could find a way to get accessible publications into the hands of the people who really covet them, that would be great. I mean, I think eBooks was promising a few years back, but I would love to get the artifact. I would love to get the printed word into the hands of more writers.
Well, poetry books are always so beautiful.
It is an artifact. It's an active, living artifact that that keeps language vibrant for anyone who picks up a book of poetry. And I really wish that we could find as a state a way to augment our poetry publishing as we do in other humanities here.
Right. Now, you are heart and soul a poet of Louisiana, aren't you?
Well, no doubt. I'm from South Louisiana, and you know, that Jarman quote about, because I'm from a place, I write with love about it. That's one of my favorite quotes, and I live by that as much as I can.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about No Brother This Storm. How did this collection start? How did it build? How did you know you were finished with it? That's always a mystery to me. How do poets know when to stop?
Well, from the onset, it was going to be a collection that addressed some of the coastal erosion, some of the environmental losses that we're suffering in South Louisiana. I received a few texts from family members and friends south of Bayou de Cadde, where we had a family camp, with photos where I used to use landmarks to navigate, and it was open water. And it really kind of drove home the notion of these maps, these doomsday maps that we keep seeing, that in, you know, in 20 years, the coastline will be in Houma proper. And so it made something that conceptually, spiritually, I was ready to be active against. Mm-hmm. It drove it home and made it personal. And I started writing a chapbook called Elliptic that a local press, Yellow Flag Press in Lafayette, published.
And they do beautiful books.
Really, really gorgeous handmade books, handcrafted books. That collection, I tried to do the best I could, not just to archive that loss, not just to inventory that loss, but to look for things that we are currently doing that give some hope. You know, the restoration process that's going on around Bayou Sauvage, the mm-hmm. things that Nickel State's doing right now in terms of coastal restoration. I tried to highlight some of the ways that we can move forward from this. About that same time that I was completing that little round of poetry, that little chapbook, I lost my mom. Mm-hmm. And that significant loss kind of took over and blended with that notion of coastal erosion and coastal loss, and the greater collection kind of came together.
Of course.
And I could not keep the haunting of those two subjects away from each other. And,
right.
And in the same way, I didn't want to just inventory what was missing now. Mm-hmm. I wanted to find a way to celebrate and move forward. That's where the collection came together as it is now.
Well, you write so much about the natural world, and you write about it with such close observation, and you have wonderful creatures in this book, frogs, birds, turtles. And I wonder if you'd read First Kiss for us, because that's a poem that shows how when you're young, you engage with nature with such fascination and hope, and, you know, possibility is everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. First Kiss. I cannot keep my daughter's mind off baby frogs. My father caught one for her the other day and put it in the hollow of her palm. She fell for its smooth green skin and shiny eyes, loved how it held her fingertips in its tiny hands. Now she's a huntress. As soon as the coffee pot goes off in the morning, she's dressed and staring out the back door glass, waits on point until I release the bolt, setting her to motion. There's no distracting her with linguistics, the difference between crapaud and wawadon. She wants to turn over every pot, pull back the cover on the barbecue pit, check each slat in the storm shutters. She knows no crack is too small for these frogs. They can flatten themselves and get under anything. They fold their bones and wait for her, each one a prince.
I love that. Oh, but on the other hand, so many of these poems are about coastal loss, and there's one that seems especially good for this time of year, and that is Breakwater.
You know, you see the footage of, particularly this time and then right after Christmas, you see the footage of the efforts we're making to use Christmas trees and other refuse to build barrier to trap land and rebuild it. And that's where this poem came from. Some of the positive activity we're doing to turn this around. Breakwater. It is not recovery. No way to lure coastline back into place. Recall silt already gone to Gulf. More like conception, as helicopters lift piles of Christmas trees into air, drop them in bundles along the marsh line. Reeds will grow in soil trapped here. Shrimp will hide as these ponds fill in. Ducks will land in flocks to feed. All new gifts against the water's need.
The water's need. That's such a chilling image. But it's inspiration for us as we struggle to beat back that tide, I think. That's what you have to write in many ways.
Because it's not going to reverse itself. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to be able to choose in many ways the world that's left when these changes abate or when they turn and change a different direction. But we're still going to have to celebrate it, and we're still going to have to honor it, and we're still going to have to live through it and do the best we can to inhabit the land. Mm-hmm. Do the best we can to adjust our habits so that we don't make the situation worse, adjust our habits to make the situation better. And I tried to find things to celebrate in the poems in this book that highlighted some of those efforts that we're making. And I mean, that's the way to move forward for me. And there's echoes of that in my own life and loss I've suffered in my own life, how I can move forward and make effort to both memorialize and capitalize on the life I have right now.
Right. You're an inspiration, Jack. You always make me feel better about the world. Now, I wonder if you'd read one of the poems about your mother that I love so much. I don't know how to pronounce the title, though. Raconte?
It's raconte, which just means to tell.
Ah, to tell. Oh, of course. I love that.
And, you know, this poem's about a story my mother used anytime she needed to take something away from me as a child.
Uh-huh.
And when I was, in fact, I had a baby bottle in my hand when I was about to get on the bus for first grade with Coca-Cola in it.
Whoa.
I wouldn't turn it loose. And so she said, you can't bring that to school. They don't let you bring that to school. It's not sanitary. And then when I got home, the Bears had taken it. And that was
the Bears.
So anything, that's the excuse she used, the story she told. Anytime if I dragged a blanket around too long and got it too dirty to get clean, then the Bears needed that blanket. Or if I had a book where all the pages kept falling out and I just wouldn't turn it loose, the Bears came and got it.
I would have fixed that book for you.
That's what I thought. But, you know, and I've tried the same story with my kids, and they don't buy the bear thing.
So, they aren't.
They set up surveillance cameras and say, that's not true, you took it. So.
That's what kids can do these days.
But I'll read this one for you. It's raconte. Whenever anything I cared about went missing, my mother told me the story of bears who struggled every day to find the things they needed. They had no home and moved around without rest under moonlight. She said they could cover hundreds of miles before sunrise. There was never any logic to the things the bears took, Mother told me. Even they didn't know what sparkly thing or noisemaker or special picture book they had to have until they held it in their huge paws, caught its shine in their eyes.
I love that. I just love that.
Thank you.
I think it'll be very useful for many parents as well. So what is it like for you when you put a collection like this together? You have one section of this book that's fables that I really adore because that's a kind of different storytelling.
Because this kind of concept of loss mm-hmm. was informing all of these poems, at first I tried to marry a lot of the themes and I tried to keep a flow going from the end of one into the next. And what I found that was happening when I tried that is that there was a sameness to it as if I was saying there was a causality to it. That this happened and this happened. So mm-hmm. it made a false narrative I didn't want in the book. So I did separate into three sections. I have an opening section that are family poems, a mini section in the middle that are really environmentally based, and then that section of fables at the end where the poems toward the end of composing these poems, the poems kind of turned toward lessons for me.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to, since I'm not really a heavy-handed poet like that, I try to let the poems play like a record would play and let readers have, you know, put the needle on it and let the readers enjoy it as much as they can without me pushing anything home. But those poems leaned a little bit toward symbolism and a little bit more toward lesson. And so I collected them and called that section Fables. In a way to kind of beg for the reader's forgiveness for letting me go in that direction. But to another degree, those were stories, many of them, that I had been told as a child to teach me things.
Right.
And so I wanted to kind of keep them together as one of a kind, kind of a piece poetry.
Mm-hmm. You know, I believe if we could just get everybody to read some poetry every day, the world would be a much better place.
Absolutely. Subscribe to Poetry Daily.
There you go.
Get it in your, get it with very passively. You just get it put in your box every day. The wonderful voices, and there are no bad voices. We can learn from reaction and action. I mean, it's just the beauty of word art of any kind, human beings of any kind. And everyone deserves to have a voice, and it's wonderful to listen.
Well, keep listening to those Louisiana voices. I love those. We've been talking with Louisiana Poet Laureate Jack Bedell, whose new book is No Brother, This Storm. Jack, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
. 2018 was one busy year. Let's look back at some of the very best books. We started off the year with King Zeno by Nathaniel Rich, a perfect tricentennial novel which drew on the building of the Industrial Canal. Then we had The New Inheritors by Kent Wascom, the latest in his series about the Woolsack family, this one set on the Gulf Coast and inspired partly by artist Walter Anderson. Praise Song for the Butterflies by Bernice McFadden was another standout, a story of female ritual slavery in Africa. And Vengeance by Zachary Lazar examined crime in the prison system, race relations, and as it turns out, will be the 2019 One Book, One New Orleans choice, an unusual blend of fiction and nonfiction.
It was dawning on me as I stood there watching all this that the men working on the still-emerging sets with tape measures, levels, hammers, and saws were not hired carpenters but inmates. The man standing next to me in the Texas Longhorns cap with a Nikon camera was an inmate. He was a reporter for the prison magazine, he told me, covering the same story I was covering. A man who happens to be the son of God is betrayed, convicted, and sentenced to death. On the third day, he rises from the grave to save the world with a message not of retribution but of mercy.
There were some great debuts here. City of Lost Fortunes by Brian Camp was an amazing supernatural fantasy which makes you see New Orleans in a different light. The Little Clan by Iris Cohen was a story of high ambition in literary New York. Nonfiction was especially spectacular this year. Be About Beauty by Kalamu Yasalam from the Neighborhood Story Project collected the writings of this longtime activist and teacher and poet.
As strong as a flower is, yet as soft too, as an open petal receiving the mist of a midnight raindrop. Be about beauty. No matter life's dirt, be about beauty.
City of a Million Dreams by Jason Berry was the perfect tricentennial history, character-driven, starting with a Bienville who was covered with tattoos. Freedom's Dance, Social Aid and Pleasure Clubs in New Orleans was a visual feast with photography by Eric Waters and text by Karen Celestan.
Just like jazz and some of the other cultural institutions that say this is New Orleans, the second line is that, and very in a very strong and colorful outward manner. I don't think there's any place else that has made that a ritual where on any given Sunday there might be a football game, but there's a second line.
Howard Phillips Smith took a dive into the Unveiled Muse, the Lost History of Gay Carnival in New Orleans, a lavish coffee table volume. And then Fire in the Hole, the spirit work of Faye Yai and the Mandingo Warriors by Rachel Brenlin, Victor Harris, and Jeffrey Ehrenreich, was a great tribute to that Mardi Gras Indian spirit.
When the spirit of Faye Yai came into me, man, I couldn't wait to get out of the house to go to tell my family. They thought something was wrong with me, honestly, because they said, well, why are you acting like that? What's wrong with you? And I told them about the spirit of Faye Yai, and they said, what are you talking about, Faye Yai? I say, the spirit of Faye Yai. They say, God have given me, you know, a given spiritual cultural name.
One of the literary pleasures of this year was Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy, The Story of Little Women and Why It Still Matters by Anne Boyd Rue, which celebrated the 150th anniversary of that classic Little Women. Pontchartrain Beach, A Family Affair by Brian Batt and Katie Danos is like a New Orleans scrapbook with a little bit of everyone's summer memories at that great amusement park. Julia Reed entertained us with South Toward Home, Misadventures in My Native Land.
I was enjoying a civilized nightcap with my good friend Elizabeth McGee Cortez when her sister Ann came hollering down the stairs from the guest room where she was bunking. She dragged us back up to the TV on which she had recorded the last bits of Fallon's monologue, which turned out to be a trifecta of the embarrassing South. Honey Boo Boo's Mama June discussing her sex life with her older daughter, the confused pumpkin. Wham bam what? The Mississippi coroner who pronounced a live man dead and sent him in a zipped-up body bag to the funeral home. And Paula Deen, who declared her comeback at a Miami food festival by mounting and riding Food Network chef Robert Irvine, who was on all fours on the stage.
And you put the load right on me.
Southern Decadence in New Orleans by Frank Perez and Howard Phillips Smith celebrated that festival that's one of a kind. Sweet Spots, In Between Spaces in New Orleans Architecture, edited by Teresa Toulouse and Barbara Yule, made us look at the Crescent City in a new way in this collection of essays inspired by the late architect Malcolm Hurd's French Quarter Manual. Kim Vaz DeVille still is exploring the baby dolls of New Orleans. Walking Ratty was a wonderful collection of essays and art which were inspired by her earlier book. One of the surprise bestsellers of the year was Mitch Landrieu's Standing in the Shadow of Statues, A White Southerner Confronts History. It was edited by New Orleans native Wendy Wolf, and it made the New York Times bestseller list, fueling rumors of a run for higher office. No surprise on the bestseller list, Fly Girls, How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History, by Keith O'Brien. It was also a New York Times bestseller, and Keith is a former reporter for the New Orleans Times-Picayune.
Louise Faden, she was from Bentonville, Arkansas. She got her start in Wichita, Kansas, selling coal, of all things, in the mid to late 1920s, but knew she wanted to fly, made it happen, and then pulled off the ultimate trick of the era. She was one of the few women who managed not only to fly airplanes, not only to race airplanes, but to have a family. Louise Faden would have two children while she continued to race.
Festivals, as usual, were quite festive this year. The Tennessee Williams Festival is well into its 30s now. Last year's fest included great speakers, such as Rick Bragg, Donna Brazile, and Richard Ford, while Saints and Sinners, the LGBTQ literary festival, celebrated its 15th anniversary. Saints and Sinners hosted Jaffe Cohen and Martin Sherman, author of Bent. The 15th annual Louisiana Book Festival took place this year in Baton Rouge, and Cheryl St. Germain received the Louisiana Writer Award. The New Orleans Poetry Festival continues to grow with an international cast of performers and audience. And the New Orleans Book Fair in December marked 17 years of small presses. Words and Music continued its long history with an impressive debut by new director Megan Holt and a new collaboration with One Book, One New Orleans.
For 20 years, that was a project, a celebration, if you will, hosted by the Pirate Sally Faulkner Society, who is one of our community partners. Through that partnership, I became more involved in Words and Music because they would generously invite our author every year to do a presentation. And when Rosemary James, the founder of the Pirate Sally Faulkner Society, decided it was time for 20 years of her directorship to end, she offered it to One Book, One New Orleans. And it's going to be an undertaking like I've never undertook before, but I'm so excited. I'm both overwhelmed and excited and nervous and thrilled at the same time. And the reason that we chose to do it, my board and I had a conversation about this when it all started unfolding, is we're looking at a way that Words and Music could become more integrated into the local New Orleans community.
Improvisation, New Orleans Gift to the World, was a new festival, begun by Randy Fertel and inspired by his book, The Art of Chaos. And in library news, the redesigned main library is open, and the opening of the Nora Navar branch is cause for celebration as well. That's the last branch to return post-Katrina. The Jefferson Parish Library was busy this year. Chris Smith reports that during 2018, more than 120 authors visited the library to talk about new books or participate in literary events. The biggest author event in 2018 was for Bruce Spicer's talk about the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' White Album, which drew 105 people. Also, the library hosted well-attended literary seminars, including the annual literary festival, a mystery writers festival, a poetry festival, a self-publishing seminar, and the sci-fi, fantasy, and horror seminar. The continued success of reading groups, including the Great Books Discussion Group, the New Mystery Book Club at the Old Metairie Library, and the Don Quixote Discussion Group, which focused on the classic novel in 2018. That was a landmark of the Jefferson Parish Library. Some other happy events of this year: the opening of the Dragonfly Performance Space on St. Cloud Avenue with founder Megan Burns, and the opening of A26 New Orleans, that literacy organization, at its new headquarters at 1720 St. Bernard Avenue. They opened up August 26th. The indefatigable bookseller Candace Huber of Chubby & Coo's Mid-City Bookshop started her own publishing imprint and launched her first three books. One of the best book signings was for Keith O'Brien's Fly Girls at Octavia Books, where he was serenaded by the Amelia Earharts. Novelist Maurice Ruffin has had a good year. He appeared in a New York Times Tea magazine feature, 32 Black Male Writers for Our Time, along with other Louisiana writers, Yusuf Komunyakaa, Jericho Brown, Ricky Laurentiis, and Brian Keith Jackson. Watch for Maurice's book, We Cast a Shadow, which will make a big splash. Its publication date is January 29th. So happy reading in 2019. Lots of good things coming your way.
Don't tell me you don't know what love is. When you're old enough to know better, when you find strange hands in your sweater.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Here in New Orleans, Gina Ferrara presents the Poetry Buffet with Joan Berezovska, Lee Meitzengrue, and Claire Martin reading from her new book, Crone. That's Saturday, January 5th at 2 at Ladder Library. Brandy Perry discusses and signs her novel, Splintered, Sunday, January 6th from 2 to 3:30 at Garden District Bookshop. The New Orleans Museum of Art and the Frick Collection present a two-day symposium, January 11th through 12th, 2019, in conjunction with the Orléans Collection, an exhibition dedicated to the collecting and collection of Philippe II, Duke of Orleans, who lived from 1674 to 1723. That's on view at NOMA through January 27th. For the complete symposium schedule and to register, check out noma.org. Antenna and the New Orleans Writers Workshop will host Business Boot Camp for Writers, along with the Authors Guild Foundation and Publishing Pros from Penguin Random House. This takes place Saturday, February 2nd from 10 to 5 at Antenna, 3718 St. Cloud Avenue, and it's free, but registration is required by January 1st. Go to antennaworks.com to reserve a place. Registration is limited. This one-day intensive workshop includes instruction on the business side of writing, breakout sessions to share experiences, and Q&As with industry experts, wrapping up with a networking happy hour reception. Join us for the Tricentennial Reading List every Tuesday at 8:44 a.m. and 5:44 p.m. The Tricentennial Reading List is brought to you by the Hellas Foundation, the John Burton Harter Trust, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.